I gave you a sheet that sort of gave a time estimate for outside work, which totals approximately 70 hours. But then I just wanted to call your attention to a lot of that. There's 19 hours of reading there under Craigie Fine Thompson, myself, Alfonso Wenham, and Kitchen, the books and articles. And then the entire volume, either of Thompson or Craigie, is, depending on which one you choose, 6 to 11 hours more. So that's about half the work in this course. I think it's good if you can do that work early on in the course, just for your, maybe you figured that out yourself, but when we get down to the seventh week, there's 7, 8, 9, and 10, you see the last 4 hours are on those selected passages for class discussion of the exegesis of those passages. And for each one of them, you're going to have to do a brief exposition, and one of them a more extensive exposition. And of course, you're going to have your paper due, the general topic paper about Deuteronomy studies, some aspects of them, also due at the end. What I'm trying to say is, don't let all that reading slip, and don't let your general paper slip into those last 4 hours. You really find yourself in a jam. And I say, I'm not going to check on you from week to week what you're doing. It's just that come the end of the course, all that stuff's due. And I think the earlier on you do all that reading, the better off you are. Just a word of comment on that. The second thing is, for for the exegesis of those selected passages, there are going to be 8 of you that will do a oral class presentation. Those of you who don't do an oral class presentation will have to give the equivalent written out. Now what I want to do, maybe some of you are ready this week, to put your name to one of those passages for an oral presentation. I'd like to line that up, say by next week, maybe another week if you're not ready this week, but by next week, so we know who is doing what oral presentation. Then those of you that aren't going to do an oral presentation and do a written one, I think I'd like to know too which one of them you're going to do, and that'd help you decide that as well as I know. Okay?
Basically, you're not required to do an oral presentation.
No, you're not required to. I think the best way to go with when I designed this, I thought there'd probably be maybe 6 or 8 people in the class. And it would just fall out that way. But the class is twice that size. So obviously everybody can't do an oral one. I think it'd be better for those of you that feel more comfortable with English to do the oral. Those of you less comfortable with spoken English, do a written. But let's see how that works. We'll see who wants to sign up for this and how it works. Maybe someone of you could break the day or ready to do that, or after the hour, I can get some names here. Okay? All right. If you look at the outline for class lecture, we started Roman 1. And we did A and B, some general comments on the book of Deuteronomy and the present consensus concerning the origin of the Pentateuch. And we were in the middle of C, the importance of the dating of Deuteronomy for the JDP theory. Now, just to get back into that a bit by way of just a little bit of review, I mentioned to you that one of the results of Wellhausen's analysis of the Pentateuch was he isolated a number of law codes and then associated those law codes with the different documents. So that
you had the covenant code, which he associated with J.B., and then he had the Deuteronomic code, which of course he associated with God. There was a holiness code, and then a priesthood code. The priesthood code was associated with T. This holiness code was in somewhere at the same time term as T. But the point is, he had that JBP progression, and in connection with it, he had a progression of law codes.
And we discussed that last week.
The D code is the one code that has a chronological hook,
621,
because his assumption was the law book found in the temple of time of Josiah was the book of Deuteronomy, but not only was it the book of Deuteronomy, it was written about 621 and represented being Mosaic, when actually it was not. Great idea here being centralization of worship. And he said then the Deuteronomic code required that in chapter 12. The covenant code in Exodus allowed multiplicity of altars, moved multiplicity of altars to a central altar to more ritual legislation in the feast code about how sacrifices were to be brought and all that kind of thing.
I think I read to you right at the end of the last hour from Driver's Deuteronomy commentary. Driver's sort of a follower of Wellhausen, in which he said the different relation in which Deuteronomy thus stands to the three codes of J, E, H, and P may be described generally as follows. Relation in which Deuteronomy stands to these three codes. It is an expansion of the laws J.E. So D is an expansion of J.E. It is in several features parallel to the law of holiness. Sort of the parallel to the holiness code. It contains allusions to laws. Allusions is the term there. Allusions to laws, not indeed always the same as, but similar to the ceremonial institution and observances codified in the rest of P.
So, he says it has allusions to stuff that gets codified in P, but in his view, P isn't codified until much later. Sort of some allusions to that, but P is much later.
Now, that's the general thesis that was developed by Wellhausen, followed by many ever since that time. The theory is based on the assumption that there's an evolutionary development to Israel's religious ideas. That's the assumption behind the theory. It's really the starting point. You assume that Israel's religious institutions, practices, ideas developed in an evolutionary pattern, and then you arrange the material in a way that reflects that assumed growth or development. That's really behind the whole structure. Now, we'll come back to this later under particularly when we get to Deuteronomy and centralization of worship. But for the present, the thing I want you to notice is that in that whole structure, Deuteronomy is the cornerstone. So that's the only fixed point. 621. Wellhausen really says that himself, that Deuteronomy is the cornerstone, in his volume, The Prolegomena, The History of Ancient Israel, which was this volume that really changed the whole course of Old Testament studies. On page 32 and 33, he says, as the book of the covenant, which would be that covenant code, and the whole Jehovistic writing, J document, in general, reflect the first pre-prophetic period in the history of the cultists, so Deuteronomy is the legal expression of the second period of struggle and transition. So you see, you move from the covenant code and the J document into the second period of Deuteronomy. He says the historical order is all the more certain because the literary dependence of Deuteronomy on the J laws, D is dependent on J, and narratives can be demonstrated independently and is an admitted fact. From this, the step is easy to the belief that the work whose discovery gave occasion to King Josiah to destroy the local sanctuaries was this very book of Deuteronomy, which originally must have had an independent existence and a shorter form than at present. This alone, at least, of all the books of the Pentateuch, gives so imperious an expression to the restriction of the sacrificial worship to one chosen place. Here only does the demand make itself felt in its aggressive novelty and dominate the whole tendency of the lawmaker. He goes on and he discusses that. But later in his book, after, you see, he sets out that progression. But then later in his book, page 368, he refers back to that first chapter, Prolegomena to the History of Ancient Israel. I'd say that's a single book that probably caused more change in approach to the study of the Old Testament than any other single book in the last 500 years. .368, he says, I always go back to the centralization of the cultus and deduce from it the particular divergences. Centralization at 621, that's his focal point. He says, I always go back to that and deduce from it the particular divergences. My whole position is contained in my first chapter. This first chapter is where he outlines that progression. There I have placed in a clear light that which is of such importance for Israelite history, namely the part taken by the prophetical party in the great metamorphosis of the worship. And what he means by that great metamorphosis of the worship is this change to a centralized sanctuary. That becomes the keystone of his whole theory. He says, I always go back to that. Now, what I want to do is give you a few comments by other Old Testament scholars that show how important that is, not only to Wellhausen's system, but to others who have followed him in this. In the volume, The Old Testament Modern Study, which is a collection of essays on various aspects of Old Testament study, edited by H.H. Rowley, published in 1951, G.W. Anderson has the article on the religion of Israel in this book. On page 283, in that article on Hebrew religion, it's called, he says, at no point has the conflict been keener than in connection with the date and nature of Deuteronomy, the keystone of the Wellhausen system of chronology. Speaks of the date of Deuteronomy as the keystone of the Wellhausen system of chronology. And he says, at no point has the conflict been keener. If there is serious uncertainty here, the entire structure of the theory is weakened and may collapse. So if you can shake that 621 date for the book of Deuteronomy, what Anderson is saying is, the whole theory is going to collapse. H.H. Raleigh, who's the editor of this book, wrote his own little book called The Growth of the Old Testament by H.H. Raleigh, R-O-W-L-E-Y, published in 1950 and reprinted numerous times. Page 29. The Code of Deuteronomy is therefore of vital importance in Pentateuchal criticism, since it is primarily by relation to it that the other documents are dated. Moreover, that code can be more precisely dated with a greater measure of probability than any other, for it is in the highest degree probable that the law book on which Josiah's reform was based was the book of Deuteronomy, and that the book first became publicly known at that time. But again, you see, it's central because the other documents are dated in relation to it. Otto Weisfeld, who wrote this, The Old Testament and Introduction, pretty standard treatment of Old Testament introduction, published in 65, on page 171, he says, De Wet, who in his Dissertatio Critica of 1805 maintained the thesis that Deuteronomy is a work which differs from the earlier books of the Pentateuch and stems from a later author, thus regarding Deuteronomy as having originated not long before the time of its discovery, namely 621 B.C. By this suggestion, the precise time of origin of Deuteronomy was established, and a fixed point was discovered by which the age of the other component parts of the Pentateuch could also be determined. De Wet's thesis thus provided Pentateuchal criticism with a point of Archimedes. Now that's his terminology, a point of Archimedes, to which it could attach itself in order to deliver it from the bonds of church and synagogue tradition. What's that? That's Mosaic idea of authorship. And put in its place an alternative dating of the Pentateuch and its parts. It is true that the necessary conclusions from De Wet's judgment were only gradually drawn. He himself, in fact, held to the view that the source we call P was older than D. See, the sequence was something that took quite a while to sort out. Wellhausen put it in the order presently, and P later. But that Archimedean point is what Eisfeld here terms this thesis of Deuteronomy being dated at 621. Now, that's rather strong terminology. There is a number of articles, and I have these on your bibliography. Let me get my bibliography. If you look under Introduction and Criticism, bottom of page 1 of that bibliography, and on over in the following pages, you notice there's an article on page 2 by G. Dahl, The Case for the Currently Accepted Date of Deuteronomy, in Journal of Biblical Literature, volume 47, 1928. There's also one by J.A. Buer, B-E-W-E-R, The Case for the Early Date of Deuteronomy, JBL 47, 1928. And then over in the next page, there's one by L.B. Patton, The Case for the Post-Exilic Origin of Deuteronomy, JBL 47, 1928. In other words, that volume of JBL for that year, 1928, carried three articles on this question of the date of Deuteronomy. And you see with Buer, you get Case for the Early Date. With Dahl, Case for the Currently Accepted Date, which would be the Wellhausen date, 621. And then with Patton, the case for the post-exilic, pushing Deuteronomy much later in the post-exilic period. Now, sounds like from the titles of those articles, you're having a case argued for an early date, a 621 date, and a late date. That's somewhat deceptive because all of these guys accept the Wellhausen date, 621. So that when they're talking about the case for the early date, they're giving the case and then critiquing it. Or the case for the late date, they're giving that case and then critiquing it and then talking about, you know, the accepted date as being the Wellhausen date. But those articles are pretty good summaries of the debate that was going on, what is that, 28 or 88, 60 years ago. The debate's still going on. But you can go back and look at those three articles. You get a pretty good introduction to some of the issues. But what I was going to, why I mentioned that is, in one of those articles, the one by Dahl, case for the currently accepted date, which is really a defense of the Wellhausen viewpoint. He makes some comments on page 360 of his article. And he says this about this same question. He says it is good for the student of Scripture to recapitulate occasionally the reasons for the critical faith that is in him. Kind of paraphrasing Scripture there. Most emphatically is this true in the case of Deuteronomy. By unanimous consent, this book is accorded a central and pivotal position in the study of Old Testament history, literature, and religion. The epical reconstruction of the course of Hebrew history, which it has been the supreme service and merit of critical biblical scholarship to mediate, depends for its validity, first of all, upon the essential correctness of our dating of Deuteronomy. This critical structure, he says, depends, first of all, for its validity, upon the essential correctness of our dating of Deuteronomy. In particular, the identification of the so-called fifth book of Moses with the book of the law mentioned 2 Kings 22 is generally regarded as the very, and here's another phrase, keystone of the arch of Old Testament research. Keystone of the arch of Old Testament research, dating of Deuteronomy. Eisfeld called it the Archimedean point, and Dahl calls it the keystone of the arch of Old Testament research. To abandon or even seriously to modify this finding, won by patient and unremitting toil of several generations of scholars, would involve a readjustment of the whole critical position, which is nothing short of revolutionary. Now that's coming from somebody who's defending the view, but admitting the whole thing hangs on the date of Deuteronomy. And in a footnote in that page, he cites some other people. George Foote Moore, Literature of the Old Testament, says, quote, Deuteronomy is a fixed point by reference to which the age of other straight in the Pentateuch may be determined, at least relatively, end of quote. W.C. Graham in the Journal of Religion, 1927, states, quote, it then becomes a sort of meridian of Greenwich, a fixed point in chronological and psychological relationship to which the other literature can be replaced. So there you get another phrase. Yeah. Dahl quoting these other guys. So you've got this Archimedean point, keystone of the arch of Old Testament research, and meridian of Greenwich in reference to the date of Deuteronomy's function in relation to the rest of the critical structure, the JDP structure. And you know, he quotes a German, he quotes him here in German, but to translate that would be, this German fellow says, with Deuteronomy stands or falls the entire critical structure, which was carefully constructed during the last decades of the 1900s. So the reason I take the time to go through all that is to try to impress on you the importance and significance of the date of Deuteronomy. If dating Deuteronomy in 6:21 is a mistaken thing, then you've undermined, you see, this whole elaborate critical theory. And these people readily admit that. So it seems to me to be of great significance that the question of the date of Deuteronomy is still not a settled question. There's a lot of debate still going on today. And even among critical scholars, these articles that I point out to you indicate some critical scholars saying it ought to be moved earlier, some are saying it ought to be moved later. So even within the academic world of critical scholarship, there's ongoing debate about where Deuteronomy is to be placed. As far as evangelicals are concerned, it ought to be moved back where it represents itself to be, the Mosaic era. So there's still a lot of discussion going on. And in the last 50 years or so, the Wellhausen position has been challenged from various directions. Those articles are reflections of that. As Dahl says in that same article, the second page of it, he says, critical scholars have been wittily characterized by someone as a band of cannibals who refresh themselves by devouring one another. That's not something you often get an idea of in popular treatments of questions like this, where it seems like, well, 6:21 is an established fact, it's not debatable. But you look in the journals and the technical articles, you find there's all this debate going back and forth, even among critical scholars. So there have been advocates of a post-exilic date. We'll see this later. We'll go through this. There have been advocates of an earlier date than 6:21, but later than Moses. In other words, pushing it back somewhat earlier, but not all the way back to Moses. There have been all kinds of viewpoints. And of course, at the same time, there always have been those who have defended a Mosaic date. I mean, all through the course of this discussion, there have been good representations of people who argued for a Mosaic date. I think at the end of this, he says, about all this debate that goes on. He says, here then are two definite problems that still await solution. They stand as a challenge to Old Testament criticism. If the experience of the past is any criteria, these problems too will in due time find their solution. It is, meanwhile, words of Isaiah 48:22, parenthesis very freely rendered, there is no peace, saith Jehovah, for the critics. There is no peace for the wicked, is what it reads in Isaiah 48. But the debate goes on. All right, that is C under Roman 1, the importance of the dating of Deuteronomy to the JDP theory. I don't think I can emphasize too much how significant that is. Roman 2 is the authorship and date of Deuteronomy, a survey of critical approaches. Now, what I've done here is simply taken first the theory of the Wellhausen school, which I've already alluded to, and then B is challenges to the classic Wellhausen position from various directions. And one is post-exilic, two is date earlier than 6:21, but during the monarchical period. Three, pre-monarchical dating, but non-Mosaic, just moving back a little bit earlier. And four, advocates of Mosaic date. So we just sort of get a survey then of these various approaches to the date of Deuteronomy. So A, the theory of the Wellhausen school. I've already summarized the basic features of it and the importance of Deuteronomy being dated in 6:21 for his theory and for the JDP theory generally. But let me just fill in a few more details, perhaps. As I mentioned earlier, Wellhausen considered Deuteronomy to be the law book referred to in 2 Kings 22 and following, which is where we have the story of the time of King Josiah. So that is the law book found in 2 Kings 22. And then in addition, he says the book was written in the time of Josiah. At the time that Wellhausen advanced his theory, the usual view was that the law book found in the temple was the entire Pentateuch, not just Deuteronomy. So, at the time that Wellhausen advanced his views, the general idea was that it was the entire Pentateuch that was found. But I don't think that saying it was only Deuteronomy is something that necessarily needs to be argued. It may have been. It's hard to say whether it was the entire Pentateuch or just Deuteronomy. The idea that it was just Deuteronomy was not a new idea. Some of the church fathers held that the law book was Deuteronomy. Among them, Athanasius, Jerome, Chrysostom. They held that it was Deuteronomy, but they didn't deny Mosaic authorship. That'd be the point of difference. As I'd mentioned before also, Wellhausen's view that it was Deuteronomy, but that it was written in the time of Josiah, he derived from H.M. Devett, D-E-W-E-T-T-E. Devett had developed that idea that Deuteronomy was written at about the time of Josiah. And his basic arguments for that were two. The first one was, he said in the historical books, with the exception of texts that are clearly from a later date, there is no trace of Deuteronomy before the time of Josiah in the historical books. In other words, Joshua, Judges, Samuel, Kings, up to the time of Josiah. He says there's no trace of this influence of Deuteronomy prior to the time of Josiah. But then you see he qualifies that by saying, except for the texts that are clearly from a later date. In other words, you see what he's saying is, you don't find Deuteronomic influence in the historical books up to the time of Josiah. If you find something that looks like it's Deuteronomic influence, well then you know that's a later insertion. That has been inserted back into that text subsequent to the composition of Deuteronomy. That he said, in the historical books, with the exception of the texts that are clearly from a later date, why are they clearly from a later date? Because they reflect Deuteronomy. There's no trace of Deuteronomy before the time of Josiah. First argument. Second one, he says the content of 2 Kings 22 confirms that Deuteronomy is in view. The content of 2 Kings 22, and what he means by that is the nature of Josiah's reform reflects emphases from the book of Deuteronomy. So he says that the content of 2 Kings 22 confirms that Deuteronomy is in view. Now those were the two main arguments. Devett speculated that perhaps Hilkiah, Huldah, and Shaphan were involved in the authorship of the book. Now who were Hilkiah, Huldah, and Shaphan? Anybody? Hilkiah was the priest. Huldah, who was Huldah? She was a prophetess to whom the book was taken after it was found. Shaphan was the one who read it to King Josiah. He was a scribe in the service of Josiah. But there are three individuals named linked with, you see, the quote, finding of the book of the law in the time of Josiah. So he speculates that perhaps Hilkiah, Huldah, and Shaphan were involved in the authorship of the book. So you can't be sure of that, but that's a suggestion. So that inseparably related to the idea that the law book found in 622 was written about that time is that the finding of it was a deliberate deception. you know, wasn't really found. It was just represented as having been found, represented as being mosaic in order to give it authenticity and authority. And then you get this pious fraud idea where the people are deceived into thinking here is the law which God gave to Moses. Now that's a rather radical view, to think that a book with the kind of content the book of Deuteronomy has could be something written by people who are deceitful enough to fraudulently present something like that as authentic when it wasn't. But some people felt there was a certain problem with that. So there was a more moderate view, you might say, advanced by some who otherwise agreed with the Wellhausen Debet position. And they said that maybe Deuteronomy was written earlier than the time of Josiah and move it back, say, to the time of Hezekiah or Manasseh, which wouldn't be moving it back very long. But they'd say it was written maybe the time of Hezekiah or Manasseh and then really lost and found during the terrible period of apostasy during the time of Manasseh. It was lost, and then it could really have been found. But in all of those views, it's assumed that Deuteronomy was first publicly proclaimed as law under Josiah. Now, one other comment about this view, which is interesting, I think. Behind this consensus, the law book is the book of Josiah, written at that time, given to the people as Mosaic. Behind that consensus was the presupposition that the narrative of 2 Kings 22 and 23 is historically reliable. Because you see, the argument is the account of 2 Kings 22 and 23 and the description there of Josiah's reformation is of such a nature that it makes us conclude that Deuteronomy must have been the impetus for that reformation. Well, that assumes then that this account is reliable. If you question the historical reliability of 2 Kings 22 and 23, then you lose the linkage for a definite historical date for the book of Deuteronomy. Now, the interesting thing is there, I'll take your question.
As far as reliableness, if this was a deliberate deception, how could it then be reliable? I'm not sure exactly what you mean by reliable.
Well,
the view is that this was a deliberate deception on their part. Then it would really be reliable if you would be.
All right. What I mean, and I'm really taking that from some of this debate, is the description of the character of the Reformation under Josiah being the way it really happened. If you don't assume that description is reliable, then you don't have a basis for saying Deuteronomy is responsible for that description. So in that sense. Dahl says on page 376, in that same article I read from you before, he says this: the historicity of these chapters is seriously challenged by a number of scholars. That is, of 2 Kings 22 and 23. The historicity is seriously challenged by a number of scholars. Upon the answer to the question of their historical value depends much, but not all. Whatever doubts may be entertained upon the subject, it simply will not do to isolate the question of the historicity of 2 Kings 22 and following as though their testimony were alone and unsupported. We have already seen that abundant independent evidence exists for placing Deuteronomy in this particular niche of literary and religious development. Later he says, but as a matter of fact, our faith in the essential trustworthiness of the record is abundantly justified by literary criticism. The editor of Kings seems to have used here an older written source, clearly distinguishable in style and thought from his own writing. This was probably included in a pre-exilic history of the Kings and may well have been written by a contemporary of Josiah, almost certainly in any case before the catastrophe of 586. The fact that the Book of Kings, in its final form, is of later date does not necessarily stamp the account in these chapters as an invention, nor does the evident working over of the Huldah oracle overbear the evident soberness of the main story. There is such a thing as over-refined skepticism. Now, the interesting thing is, here is this critical scholar, this question historicity of all kinds of things, trying to defend the historicity of 1 Kings 22 and 23 against the very same kind of people who are questioning the historicity of 2 Kings 22 and 23, and says there is such a thing as over-refined skepticism. And he goes on and discusses this for a couple more pages. But he says, in spite of all this, it would nevertheless seem that we must presuppose a historical basis for some, at least, of the tradition. Surely they're not all manufactured out of whole cloth. The reform of King Josiah seems better attested than most. The balance of probability seems to be decidedly in favor of the general historicity of 2 Kings 22. It's really interesting to find a guy like this trying to argue for historicity of 2 Kings 22 and 23 in order to support this theory, when generally the method is quite the reverse. But you see the way that relates to the case. And some of those that wanted to move this see to a later date challenged the historicity of 2 Kings 22 and 23. But that's the basic Wellhausen position. I think I've said enough about the general theory. Yeah.
In that quote, he says, "Well, there's abundant evidence outside the
Testuality." Yeah, he said that, but what he means by that is we've already seen that the abundant independent evidence exists for placing Deuteronomy in this particular niche of literary and religious development. He'd be arguing this kind of a scheme.
Is there some other kind of agenda they had for
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's more simply this long-standing now, for a century, view that Israel's religion developed in an evolutionary pattern, like religions are assumed elsewhere to develop, and that when you look at the Pentateuch and you find these magnificent, sophisticated God concepts, say in Genesis 1, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. I couldn't possibly, they say, have existed in the early days of Israel, such a elevated God concept as you find there. It must be late. So Genesis 1 is peak. It's written in the Exodus. And it's that evolutionary scheme of things that is the heart of it, I think. They're looking at it as from a history of religion standpoint, and trying to reconstruct by the historical critical method a history of Israel's religious development. That's really the agenda. Yeah.
Wouldn't they also have at the moment to deny the historicity of the Thomas St. Paul and bring that out? Or would that be a result?
I think whether it's a motive, it certainly is a result. See that historical critical method which they're committed to is a method which, from the outset, would exclude divine interventions, miraculous things of that sort. In other words, the historical critical method says you have to look at and be able to explain cause and effect, everything that happens. That's scientific. You have to work with the analogy of history. That is, things that may be said in these traditions to have happened that we don't find analogies for in our own experience, those things then didn't happen. The analogy of history is sort of a control on whether or not you can accept really divine interventions and miraculous. And by the way that methodology is set up, anywhere you find divine interventions or miraculous, the assumption is we know those things don't happen. So if you find them there, we know that, that's not true. It's legendary, mythological, or whatever. So that the method sort of, you see, it's bringing that kind of a method and imposing it on material that by its very nature is alien to the method. But that's supposed to be scientific. Okay. Maybe we better take a 10-minute break. It's 10 minutes of. And we'll go on then to challenges to the Wellhausen position from various directions. We'll look at that then, second hour.
I'd like to do Deuteronomy 29.
Dunlap.
Yeah,
Dunlap.
For the that would be for the oral presentation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's all. That's what I'm putting in there.
Oh. Okay.
Egg for five. Oh, wait a minute. Had you spoken?